News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.
On this day, 30 years ago, South Africans went to the polls and voted Nelson Mandela as president in a democratic South Africa. But what has been the impact of Nelson Mandela's politics on the country, and how will the ANC, his party, fare in the forthcoming election? Well, joining me now to talk about it is Professor Stephen Friedman from the Faculty of Humanities and Politics at the University of Johannesburg. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning.
Looking back at 30 years since that famous election, how do most South Africans view the progress?
Well, part of the problem is we don't know how most South Africans view the progress, because although there has been substantial progress in some areas, one thing that has not changed in this country is that some of us speak for all of us. So about two-thirds of the population doesn't really get a voice. They vote, they are talked about, but we're never quite sure what they think. Although we do, of course, get an inkling when we see election results, because those are really the only way we have to establish how most people think.
What is the prediction as to the likely outcome? In the 2019 election, the ANC commanded 57% of the vote, and 50% is enough to guarantee the formation of a government with the ANC as the leading party.
Well, there's a strong, it's almost taken for granted that the ANC would drop below 50%, and I think that's a little hasty. The ANC is clearly in decline. You mentioned their 2019 national election result. We also had nationwide local elections in 2021. In those elections, the ANC dropped below 50% for the first time in its history since 1994. It got around 46%. If you track municipal by-elections since then, which is really the only indication we have of how people are voting in between elections, they show that the ANC has not managed to regain that ground. But I think it may be a little bit hasty to assume that the ANC will drop below 50% this time. But we're certainly looking at an ANC vote which will be substantially down on that 57% you mentioned, and may well be below 50% for the first time since 1994.
However, it will probably still form a government with the help of other parties.
Yes, it's. I cannot see any route into government for a non-ANC coalition. Because the differences between the non-ANC parties are so great in some cases that to see them finding some way of governing together for 5 years is not particularly likely. So I think the confident prediction is that it'll be a government with, but if the ANC doesn't get 50%, that it will form a coalition with one or more parties, and that will be our government for the next 5 years.
Now, any one of the parties in my country would be delighted with about 50% of the vote, because that's not the way it's working anymore in this country. But the ANC commanding less than 50% would be a sort of a milestone, and would reflect perhaps some of the perceived failures of the ANC to deliver on the promises of Nelson Mandela.
Yeah. I mean, whether you see them as the promises of Nelson Mandela, or as the ANC repeatedly tells us, the collective thinking of the ANC, because they always make the point that Mandela was an important individual, but there was an organization behind him. Certainly, you know, there is disaffection with the ANC. It started to become visible about a decade ago, in fact, in elections in 2014, because in those elections, black middle-class voters who had supported the ANC really defected from the ANC, no longer voted for it. And since then, we've seen an erosion of their support among people who are not middle-class. There is declining confidence in the ANC. But of course, your point about your own country's electoral fortunes of parties in your own country, which of course You know, what you're describing for your country is typical of democracies around the world. Parties who get 50% are a rarity. And I think that, you know, what is happening in South Africa gradually is that South Africa will join the rest of the world, and parties who get 50% will be something we don't see here anymore. But of course, yeah, that's not simply because of some natural process. It's because people feel that the ANC has not provided the service to most people which they expect from it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the principal grounds for complaint seems to be that the promised redistribution of wealth and property did not happen.
No, that is true. It didn't happen. But certainly my reading, and I'm not saying that's not an issue, but my reading of what is causing disaffection is a little bit different. I mean, first of all, I mentioned the middle-class voters. And I think among black middle-class voters particularly, the feeling is close to what you're describing. In other words, they feel that 30 years of democracy hasn't changed white control of the economy, as they certainly feel that whites are still in control of the economy, and that is not a non-racial economy. Among people who are not in the middle class, it's more a feeling that public services do not provide people with what people feel they're entitled to. Just to give you one very concrete example, certainly my own soundings suggest that in the 2019 local elections, the ANC's biggest vote loser was water provision, was providing adequate, clean water to people who are living in poverty. So at the, you know, this stage of the process, it's less a case of people saying, well, you know, why hasn't wealth been distributed, than people saying, well, you know, why don't I get the public service which I'm entitled to? You know, you say I'm now a full citizen, but you don't actually, you know, provide me with those services. Another huge vote loser for the ANC is power outages. You know, we've had rolling power outages for some years now. Interestingly enough, we haven't had any for the last month, but that will not necessarily help the ANC because, of course, people remember that we've had them for some time, and they don't expect them to end this time anyway. So it's more a sense of, you know, basic services are not being provided to people who need those services in order to address poverty. Because, you know, if you live in poverty and the opportunities in the marketplace are not great, which unfortunately they're not, then you do need effective government services if you're going to put bread on the table.
How big are the concerns about corruption within the ANC? You know, people visibly becoming wealthy from, if you like, nothing.
Well, there are very widespread concerns about corruption and justified for concerns about corruption. But I think some of the ways in which corruption is explained are a bit simplistic. You know, we have a sort of picture of, and, you know, you mentioned Nelson Mandela earlier, you know, all the problems were solved in 1994. And we had this great saintly man who, of course, was not himself corrupt. And somehow bad actors got hold of the government and the governing party and turned it into a vehicle for corruption. And I don't think that's entirely accurate, because the problem, and that doesn't excuse the corruption, it explains it. Certainly your earlier question about inequality, you know, if you have a situation where people feel that they can't make it into the middle class and the upper middle class through the marketplace, you know, then they see government as an alternative, and they see enriching themselves through government as an alternative. So, you know, I'm pretty convinced that if the ANC were to really implode in this election, and be replaced by a non-ANC coalition, even if that unlikely event happened, I don't think we'd have to stop fighting corruption here, because I think it's really a symptom of the fact that you have ambitious people to feel that doors are closed to them, and therefore they use corruption to get what they would perhaps in another get through the market.
Prior to this, the electoral system was fairly straightforward. You had a list system, and depending on the proportion of the vote that you won, that determined your representation in Parliament. The provision now has been made for independents to run separate from any political party. Is that likely to complicate the whole business of formation of government?
No, it won't. And first of all, I think it's important to say that, I mean, you're correct, independents can run. But when this was as a result of a decision by the highest court, the Constitutional Court, and when that decision was taken, there was a loud public debate about whether that meant we should change the electoral system or not. And the decision which the governing party took is that we didn't change the electoral system. So independents have been accommodated in the system you describe. It's still proportional representation. It's still a simple process of a quarter of 1% gets you a seat because they're 400 members of parliament. But independents have been slotted into that. The other reason why independents are not going to make an impact is because despite the fact that the principle might be important that independents should contest, in fact, independents have never done well in South African elections. And of the dozen or so independents who are contesting this time, I would think that only one has a reasonable prospect of getting elected. So they're not really going to be at the table if coalitions are formed. What we are seeing in this country is we talked about the decline of the ANC. We're seeing in this country the decline of the bigger political parties. So the ANC is dropping. The Democratic Alliance, which is the official opposition, is also losing votes to a variety of other opposition parties. And the third biggest party, the Economic Freedom Fighters, is not really gaining. So what is happening, and I expect that to be become much more of a factor in our politics in the next few years, is that those big parties that people have voted for in the past are declining and the votes being spread among small parties, which means, of course, that whether the ANC loses its majority this time or not, coalitions are really going to be part of our future, as they are in other countries which have the same electoral system.
Finally, the great Rainbow Nation, what looked like an experiment 30 years ago, looks to have settled itself rather nicely. My only observation would be from afar, looking at maybe the South African rugby team, which is multiracial, looking at some of the club teams that our club teams go down to play against in South Africa and they come here. And it does seem like a more comfortable relationship between white and black. Is that a fair assessment, or is that maybe looking at it somehow through rose-tinted glasses?
Well, a little bit of both. I mean, you're certainly right that if you consider where we come from, there has been significant progress on that level. And, you know, obviously you mentioned rugby as one example. I mean, it is of interest that, the South African's rugby successes really do seem to be celebrated now across racial barriers. There was a time in which I was a bit sceptical when people claimed that black people supported the rugby team, but they certainly do support it now. Black people would probably like white people to be a bit more enthusiastic about the football team. But that may have more to do with the fact that it's not very successful than the fact that most of the players are black. So on that level, and there's a lot more social integration and integration in the workplace and so forth. What I think one, the reason why it's a little bit naive to say that is that, we haven't really moved away from a situation in which most people who run corporations are white, in which the professions are still quite white dominated. So although there'd be progress in those areas, it really would be a mistake to say that race is not an issue in this country at the moment. It remains the most important South African issue, even if the stakes have been lowered by 30 years of democracy.
Professor Stephen Friedman, Faculty of Humanities and the Politics Department at the University of Johannesburg, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thanks for the opportunity.
News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.